The ruby red pilot light on the Fender Twin Reverb is glowing in the dark. It's time for this edition of Before the Soundcheck, the program that offers you a look inside the lives and careers of people who make the music happen. We talk up close and intimately with artists, musicians, producers, and engineers, with the music teachers, the bus drivers, the production crew, the agents, and yes, even the managers. Everyone involved in making the music you love and who bring it to you. Today's program is sponsored by Subsurface Technologies Incorporated. Their Aquafreed well rehabilitation system restores lost water production using environmentally sound carbon dioxide and producing no waste stream. Once water production is restored, AquaGuard maintains the well pump rate and water level, thereby reducing energy costs and putting the system on a sustainable, low-cost path to the future. Subsurface Technologies was green before green was popular. Call 800-283-3353 or visit them at stiwater.com. And now, here's your host, Tony Sarno.
Thank you, Chris, and welcome everybody to the show. Mark Maynard has hands-on experience in every facet and genre of the music business. He has 35-plus years working in key positions with major labels, independent labels, and distribution companies, and he's worked in independent marketing, sales, promotion, and consulting. He has been instrumental in developing the careers and success of artists such as George Strait, Reba McEntire, Ray Stevens, John Schneider, Steve Earle, Lee Greenwood, Steve Warner, and Waylon Jennings. At MCA Records Nashville, he received an industry award for developing the first successful marketing to debut a country album at number one on the Billboard Country Album Sales Charts, George Strait's Oceanfront Property. Hey, welcome, Mark Maynard.
Hey, Tony, thanks.
Great to have you on the show. Could you walk me through the bullet points of your career?
When I was about 10 or 11, my dad built a recording studio. He owned a cabinet shop, and the upstairs was empty, and he converted it into a recording studio. So I got immersed in that a little bit. And prior to that, he had been on radio in the late 40s, early 50s, singing in a gospel group, WNAF here in Nashville. He had a 30-minute radio show. So yeah, come by it honestly. It's in my blood, I guess, from the recording side and the music side.
And he cut some records, didn't he? Didn't he cut some records?
He actually did. He cut a few records, and my dad's still out there. He loves music. He has his whole life. He's 92, and he still loves it. So I get that from him. It's a passion we share together, is music. So
that's great.
I got in the music business in around 75 officially, and went to work for a company called Central South Music here in Nashville. They were a record distributor that owned about 75 or 80 retail shops called the Sound Shops. Plus, they distributed to about 1,500 to 2,000 mom-and-pop record shops throughout the country. It was a great education, worked with all the labels, and got immersed in the music business and learned a lot about it from those guys. It was owned by Randy Davison, Chuck Adams, and J.P. Bennett. And had a pleasure working for them, and they were very kind and very gracious to me and were open with their knowledge of the music business and shared with me their contacts and taught me a lot in just a few short years working there. It was great.
What was your job there?
I was the buyer for the product. If the labels would come in and call on us, and if they had a new release, they would talk to me about it, and I would decide how many we would put out in the stores and how much product we needed on hand to sell to our other one-stop customers.
Okay, and what was next?
After that, I left there. I went to work for MCA Records Distribution. I had Nashville, Knoxville, and Chattanooga as my region. Worked there for about a year, year and a half, and then the country division, MCA Nashville, hired me, and I worked with Jimmy Bowen and Bruce Hinton there for until about 1990.
Okay, what was your job there?
National sales manager, which was great, so.
And weren't you the youngest national sales manager?
They hired me, I guess, what it was, 25 or 26, maybe, when they hired me. And it was great. I'm assuming I was one of the youngest national sales managers ever. And I never officially researched it, but that's what I was told. So it was great. Had fun. Worked there for about, like I said, until about 1990. And we literally worked about 28 hours a day, 8 or 9 days a week.
you were working with George Strait and Reba and Steve Earle.
That's correct. Bowen had signed a lot of artists at the time, including George Strait, Reba McEntire, and some he inherited from the previous people there. But George and Reba and a lot of those people had never had number one albums, and I was part of the marketing team that gave them the first number one albums. George Strait, Reba McEntire, Steve Earle, John Schneider, Ray Stevens, Lee Greenwood, quite a list of people, Steve Warner, quite a list of people who'd never had number ones, and we had the pleasure of working with them and marketing their first number one albums. It's great.
You would go on radio tours with those, the tours where you'd go around to radio stations?
We would do retail and radio tours. I would take a radio guy with me, like David Haley or Sheila Shipley or some of those people. Sheila ran the overall department, and my department actually reported directly to her. She ran the radio division. And at the time, singles retail counted into the top 75 country singles chart. So we had to have a kind of a subdivision there that reported to her on that. So we would go out, and when I would go visit a market like Portland or L.A. or someplace like that, usually a radio guy would go with us, and we would visit retail and radio at the same time and take an artist with us and have fun.
Well, let's play one of those number one songs, George Strait, Oceanfront Property.
If you leave me, I won't miss you, and I won't ever take you back. Girl, your memory won't ever haunt me, 'cause I don't love you, and I feel by that. I got some oceanfront property in Arizona. From my front porch you can see the sea. I got some oceanfront property in Arizona. If you'll buy that, I'll throw the Golden Gate in free. The ground you walk on, I never have, and that's a fact. I won't follow or try to find you, 'cause I don't love you. Now if you'll buy that, I got some oceanfront property in Arizona. Front porch, you can see the sea. I got some oceanfront property in Arizona. If you buy that, I'll throw the Golden Gate in free. I got some oceanfront property in Arizona. From my front porch, you can see the sea. I got some oceanfront property in Arizona. If you buy that, I'll throw the Golden Gate in free. If you buy that, I'll throw the Golden Gate in free.
So when you worked with George Strait, was he a big star at that point, or did you turn him into a big star?
George was just getting started, and I can't take all the credit. I was just part of the team that did it, and we developed him, and he was big in Texas. He was doing really well. He was selling out shows all throughout Texas, but he hadn't been outside of Texas, and Bowen offered Strait a deal that he couldn't refuse. He basically told him that, hey, I will supplement your tours and put you out all over the country so that you don't lose money, and that's pretty much what he did. He put him all around the country into venues. MCA subsidized that for a brief period of time, and in no time at all, George was a national star.
And do you think that kind of nurturing goes on these days, where a label will actually support an artist on the road until they hit it big?
You know, they do somewhat. Obviously, it's a whole different world now, because the used to be we could make the money off selling the records, and we didn't have to dip into taking part of their publishing or their concert venue ticket sales or anything like that. But these days, most labels are doing 360 deals these days, where they take a little bit of everything the artist gets in terms of their revenue generation.
So nowadays, the labels aren't particularly supporting the artists like they used to, where they would give them a stipend or whatever, right?
Not as much as they used to. Occasionally, we'll get behind an artist like that, but pretty much they want artists who come through the door fully funded and ready to go.
Right, and that's pretty tough to be an artist at doing that. But things have changed a lot with independent artists being able to release their own records and things like that.
Yeah, it's a new business, and independents have somewhat of a little bit more of a level playing field in terms of the way they can get out on social media and build a following.
Right. What happened after MCA?
Okay, I left there. I started my own company called Chartworks, and I did pretty much the same thing I was doing as a national sales manager, just independently on my own for about 5 years. Did well, enjoyed it, and then I got an offer from Johnny Phillips down in Memphis to come down and be his national sales manager, which I pretty much turned down initially. And the way we got started talking, I'd sent him a proposal to put together a blues label. And he called me up and says, hey, that's, you know, something I'm looking at doing anyway. I've got a little idea for Ice House Records, and this is pretty much exactly what I've been looking at doing. And he said, I'd love to talk to you about it. So I went down and talked to him. And I told him I didn't really want to be a national sales manager, but I would help him open up a lot of national accounts. At the time, Selected Hits, SOH Music, was just a southern regional distributor with a handful of accounts throughout the South. And he wanted to expand and pick up all the national accounts all over the U.S. So we worked out a deal with it. I would help open those up, and Tiffany Couch would become their national sales manager. And I would then, once we got the accounts opened up, I would be VP of A&R for his blues label, which was great. I love blues, so it was perfect.
And Tiffany Couch, that would be Tommy Couch's daughter?
Wife.
Tommy Couch's wife.
Correct.
Tommy Couch from Malico Records. For the folks that don't know, Malico Record Label is a very, very historic label with a lot of great blues and R&B records that they did. Mostly what, Mark, in the 70s or 60s and 70s?
60s, 70s, and 80s, and they did well in the 90s, and they're still doing well from what I understand. They had a lot of gospel music, spiritual music, and stuff like that, but they also did well with people like Little Milton, Johnny Taylor, and people like that. So
Ice House Records, a subsidiary of Selecta Hits. Want to give us a quick rundown on...
Actually, Selecta Hits was the parent corporation, which Sam Phillips runs, the nephew of the original Sam Phillips. And then SOH Music, which is label development side of Selecta Hits, which Johnny Phillips runs. So you have SOH Music and Selecta Hits. It's a little confusing, but they're actually functioning like two separate companies, even though they're under the same parent corporation. And it's all run by three family members. It's Kathy Gordon, Sam Phillips, and Johnny Phillips.
And Mark, I think it'd be interesting for the audience to know the story about how Selecta Hits got started.
Primarily what happened was that Tom Phillips was the original Sam Phillips of Sun Records fame. That was his brother. And he was managing Jerry Lee Lewis when Jerry Lee married his cousin and ended his career temporarily. And Tom Phillips was out of job. So he went to Sam and said, hey, I've got an idea. I want to sell a few records at some of the Pop Tunes, I think was the name of the record shops around town. So he would take three of Sam's singles from Sun Records and put them in a bag, staple them together, and write Selecta Hits on it. And he would carry these around and put them in the record shops. It was a grab bag, and I think they probably sold for about $1 for three singles. And people would buy them, and because they were all three Sun Records, they would usually get six hit songs inside of them, including Elvis and, you know, Carl Perkins and all those people. It was great records. And Sam did this for a while, started doing fairly well with it. And other people came to him and said, hey, will you put my singles in there, not just Sun's? And so he started picking up a little distribution that way. And then other people started coming to him and says, hey, when you go around, will you carry my albums in there? Put those out too. So he did that. And before you know it, he had a company going called Selecta Hits Distribution.
And that turned into the, isn't it the largest independent distributor to this day? Or is that no longer true?
It was, I don't know if it was ever the largest, but it's probably the last one left. So, yeah, last man standing, as they say. But they have done really well since, I think that was probably 1959, if I remember right, when they started. But they've been in business ever since, and they are still standing and still hanging in there and doing well. So.
And what was your job there, Mark?
I basically helped them open up all the national accounts and worked with Tiffany on that. And then from there, at the same time, I was also functioning as VP of A&R for ISAS Records.
Okay, well, just tell me what that means, opening up these accounts.
Okay. For an example, there was a company called Handelman based out of Flint, Michigan, that had they handled 1,300 Walmarts and 600 Kmarts that they serviced in terms of putting the music into. I went into them, and they were not purchasing any records from Selecta Hits when I first went to work there. So I went up and visited the Handelman people. I knew some of them, sat down with them and talked to them, and they opened up the account. And so that basically gave them 1,900 more access to 1,900 more stores from Select Hits that they could put their product into. Did the same thing with the warehouse on West Coast. They just went around to record stores like that and opened them up.
Okay, and you also, I know this from personal experience because you signed me, but tell us what you did for Ice House Records, the blues label.
Well, it was a small label. Primarily, it was basically Johnny and I. And we would find acts. We'd sit down and listen to them, talk to them. Johnny had the final say so on it. But we would sit down and listen to acts and see who we liked and then arrange some kind of production deal on them and go in and put together an album, produce it, put it together, and put it out and market it. And I was doing not only the producing in some cases and – but then I would also get out and market it and call on the clients and sell the records to them and a little bit of everything. Typical small label, you wear every hat for what's over with. So.
Right. And then I think your biggest success there was with the rap group 3-6 Mafia, wasn't it?
Well, there was when I was opening up the national accounts, they had Johnny had a band called 666 Mafia on SOH Music that he was selling locally there. They were selling 2,000 or 3,000 sets. You know. And so we went around to a lot of the national accounts, and the first we didn't realize they would buy rap, and then I let them know, but we had 666 Mafia, and they said, "What is it?" And I said, "Well, it's kind of like gangster rap." And they said, "Oh, you mean like dirty rap?" And I said, "Yeah, pretty much." And they said, "Well, we can sell the heck out of that." So they started collecting those, and they started buying all the titles from us and putting them out, and next thing you know, we're selling hundreds of thousands on those guys.
Well, I know that from, of course, my experience with you there, Mark, at Ice House, is you also produced some records there.
Well, in fact, that's how I got really part of the reason I was hired there was I had produced a record on the Toler Brothers. It was the first thing I ever tried in a studio. Dan and Frank Toler of the Allman Brothers, Greg Allman Band. And I went in the studio in Hendersonville and knocked out an album in 2 or 3 days and just had, basically, they did what they were doing live. They were playing live blues and just cut some standards, and we knocked it up pretty quickly just to have something for them to pitch around to clubs to get gigs with. So we knocked that out, mixed it down, and Johnny liked it and wound up buying it and putting it out on Ice House Records. And from there, I wound up being VP of A&R and helping out.
And you did the Radio Kings, is that right?
I didn't produce them. Mike Donella produced them. Johnny signed those. I did find a guy named Microwave Dave of Microwave Dave and the Nukes, and we picked him up. But we had Johnny Sandlin out of Decatur produce that record.
Didn't he produce the Allman Brothers?
He produced the Allman Brothers, Widespread Panic, Greg Allman, Jimmy Hall. He was VP of A&R for Capricorn Records for years.
They couldn't get anybody good, huh?
No names. Johnny Sandlin was a great guy. He has since passed away and missed by a lot of people, but he was a great guy. Spent a lot of time in his studio, watched him work. So.
You produced that record that I did called It's a Blues Thing, and you also wrote the title track with me. It's called Screaming Blues Demon, It's a Blues Thing.
It was fun times.
Okay, well, let's play a little bit of that. So then, wow, you wore a lot of hats there at Ice House and Selecta Hits. And where'd you go after there, Mark?
After that, I went to a company called Lofton Creek here in Nashville, worked with Mike Bruschetta. Yeah, I've done a little bit of everything my whole life in the music business, but one thing I had not done, even though I'd been around it quite a bit and knew how it worked, I had not actually personally done radio promotion. And Mike hired me to become his national sales manager, and I took it because I wanted to come back to Nashville from Memphis, but also he was going to teach me radio. So I worked there for about 3 years, and had fun. Mike's a great guy in terms of, he knows radio probably better than anybody on the planet. In fact, I think he invented radio promotion, if they really go back and look it up.
But, well, yeah. He taught his son, too, that who runs.
His son is Scott Bruschetta, who has Big Machine Records, which is probably one of the biggest independent labels on the planet.
Right.
But Mike hired me in February. We released a single in June. We had a number one single in October, which is great. Come back to Nashville as an independent label and have a number one single on the national country charts on Billboard was great. We shipped almost gold on the album that came out, sold really well, and the label made a couple million off of it.
That's great. And what are you doing now, Mark?
Now I'm doing independent marketing under Momentum Music. I've been doing Momentum Music for about 10 years. It's my own little marketing promotion company. And so it's a matter of I just pick and choose occasional clients that want my help.
The way we met is you heard a tape of our band, the Thunderhawks, that had Eddie Shaver was in the band and Keith Christopher.
That is a fabulous album. It's doesn't sound like anybody else out there. You had to compare it. I've always said if the Thunderhawks were if AC/DC had come from Macon, Georgia. So,
well, I think we're going to close out with a tune by the Thunderhawks. And Mark Maynard, thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll do it again.
Tony, thank you. Always a pleasure, and keep me posted, okay?
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon.
See you, bud. Bye.
Interesting stuff, the music business. I was going to play a song by the Thunderhawks, but I'm now using one of the songs for the beginning and the end of my show as a theme song. So since tomorrow's Memorial Day, I'd like to dedicate this song to all those who gave their lives to keep us free. And I recorded this in Nashville a few years back. Actually, Mark was the executive producer on this record. It's my arrangement of America the Beautiful. And Keith Christopher on bass, Rick Donnelly on drums, Steve Rossi on piano, Donnie Williamson on Hammond organ, Mike Lefty Hall on blues harp. And I had a great vocal group. Lisa Silver put together a great vocal group. Cindy Richardson and Vicky Hampton and Lisa on background vocals. Thank you. Tony Sarno. Thanks so much for listening. I'd like to thank Bridget Cohnhorst and Chris Lucky and Ronnie Lake at Hippie Radio 94.5 in Nashville. I also want to thank our sponsor, Subsurface Technologies. If you work for a water company or know someone who does, visit stiwater.com. And you can reach me at tonysarno.com and Tony Sarno Music on Facebook and Instagram. Before the Soundcheck is a production of Marconi Records. The theme song is Spirit by the Thunderhawks.